The old man gripped his net, waiting for it to fill with fish, his calloused and weather-beaten hands clenched around the fibers with practiced strength. But his eyes remained unfocused, barely paying attention to the task at hand. There was a certain calm to fishing. It was an unchallenging routine, one he had committed to every day for the last 50 years. Here in the Corinthian Gulf, his greatest foe would be the hot summer sun tanning his hide while he stood unprotected in the small boat. A shiver passed up his spine. He thought he heard a familiar tune on the wind. He gritted his teeth and squeezed his eyes shut. His fists tightened on the net until his knuckles turned white. His boat rocked up and down in the tide. The old man tried to tell himself that he was just imagining things, but he could not. They were circling his boat. He was sure of it. The Nereids had returned, and this time they were out for blood. They would drag him under the water and squeeze the air from his lungs before he had time to draw breath. He opened his eyes again and searched the water, dreading what he might see. In his mind, he saw hands reaching from the water, or a scaled face twisted in cold fury, shark-like teeth shining in the sunlight. But when he opened his eyes, the water was calm again. She was not coming for him today. The old man collapsed into his boat, shaking from fear. The hot sun beat down on his back, now unheated. The true danger of his fisherman's life was not the sun. It was an ocean that would never forget what he did. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every other Saturday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. This week, we're telling The Haunted Ship, a story from the Greek coast. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, this story features violence, gruesome images, suicide, suicidal ideation, and a scene of implicit sexual assault. Please exercise caution for children under 13. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast, and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoyed today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. We also now have merchandise. Head to parcast.com/merch for more information. If you want to hear more tales, you can find all of Parcast's shows on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Haunted Ship is a story that appears in Theodore Giannakoulis' book, Nereid, Tales of Modern Greece, published in 1930. A journalist and poet, Giannakoulis is well known for translating the works of famous American poets Robert Frost, E.E. Cummings, and William Carlos Williams into Greek. A review of Giannakoulis' work once said, quote, "The author, formerly voice of America to Greece, journalist and poet, is Greek-born and American-bred, so he understands both the country he writes of and the one he writes for." End quote. Many of his stories come from this unique mixing of traditions. However, The Haunted Ship could be from any tradition because it touches on a universal idea about sailors. That idea is that sailors have a built-in reverence for the ocean. This is an unsurprising phenomenon. Before the existence of subnautical technology, the ocean was as mysterious to humanity as the heavens. The strange and unique creatures caught in fishing nets were our only glimpse of the world beneath the waves. So sailors adopted all manner of superstitions to keep the ocean's wrath at bay. including rules such as no whistling on board, or red sky at night, sailors delight, red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. But more universal than any of these is the classic superstition that female, humanoid creatures live beneath the waves, tempting you to join them in underwater bliss. Nassos stood on the deck of his late father's ship, the Karave, looking out onto the dock. His crew was busy loading cargo efficiently into the hold under the watchful eye of their captain. Nassos bit his lip unconsciously. Captain, even the word was strange to him. He had never wanted this position, nor did it come easily to him. He did not have the mind of a merchant or a seaman, but this made no difference to his father, who bequeathed the family business to him on his deathbed. The last few weeks had been miserable, and it was the best Nassos could do to not appear seasick in front of his crew. The crew came entirely from the islands of Syrah, and every one of them stood at least a foot taller than him. If any of them wanted to mutiny, it would be far too easy to overpower their captain. Nassos was shaken from this thought by the voice of his first mate, Leander. The islander stood on the deck below him, eyes looking up expectantly.
"Captain," he repeated, "all cargo is aboard."
Nassos raised his voice so the whole crew could hear him.
"Let us set sail, then."
The crew promptly got to work. In the back of his mind, he worried that Leander was obeying his commands more out of obligation than respect. Soon the ship was underway, the port town disappearing on the horizon behind them. It was only a week's journey to their destination in Sicily, and the wind was in their favor. Nassos smiled mirthlessly. It was a slim hope, but maybe they wouldn't have to spend more than a week at sea. That night, he found himself alone on deck, the crew having gone below decks to rest, or at least that's what they told him. He could hear the sounds of them laughing from down below, probably playing some game. He sighed deeply and looked out onto the dark water. He would never know the camaraderie they felt on the ship. To them, the sea was freedom. To him, it was a prison. His father often said the role of a ship's captain could be the loneliest job on Earth. Until now, Nassos had not known what he meant. After casting a glance around to make sure none of the crew was on deck, Nassos withdrew a violin from his pack and began tightening the strings. Music was the one escape he had from his dreadfully unhappy sailor's life. If his father had let him, he would have become a musician and spent his days on solid earth plucking away at his violin. But now it was just a hobby to keep him from throwing himself overboard. He played, and the usual feeling of calm began to wash over him. The raucous voices of his crew faded away, and he closed his eyes, letting the Karave, the cargo, and the ocean itself fade away beneath the smooth sound of the music. Nassos opened his eyes at the jarring sound. The water was as still as ever. Continuing to play his instrument, he peered over the side of the boat to see the full moon reflected back at him. A thin mist was floating above the reflection. But it was not just mist that he saw. As Nassos strained his eyes, he realized that there was a translucent woman gliding across the surface of the water, her golden hair sparkling in the moonlight. Her body was speckled with scales. There were gills on her sides and fins gracefully curved from her spine. His bow almost stopped in shock, but he forced himself to keep playing. If his music had drawn this creature, surely stopping would mean her disappearance. As he continued playing, more such creatures began to circle the ship, though none as fair as the first one. She must be the princess of these Nereids. A tear rose in his eye.
As these Nereids danced before him, he was reminded of the woman back home in Sarah who loved dancing to his music. He would probably be married to one of them by now if his father had not forced him to become a sailor. He saw no romance in a life on the ocean. Then, a mad thought occurred to Knossos. What if he could catch this Nereid princess and make her his bride? Would that be the solution to all of his problems? The crew would respect a man who could tame a Nereid, and he would no longer spend his nights alone under the sky. Knossos altered his tune, turning the calming melody into a lively reel. The Nereids began to breach the water in time with his music, and some alighted soundlessly on the deck. The princess was the first, followed by a handful of others. Forgetting the mortals' presence, they danced wildly along the deck, the moonlight reflecting every which way through their iridescent forms. Knossos approached the ring of Nereids, bow gliding along the neck of his violin with practiced dexterity. None of them paid him any mind. As they danced past him, he saw them laugh silently with a kind of bliss that only Nereids know. He took each step cautiously, never taking his eyes off the Nereid princess's golden hair. She didn't even notice the man creeping up on her, playing the music faster and faster. Then, when she danced close to him, he dropped his violin and grabbed her by her golden locks. When we return, Knossos attempts to subdue the Nereid princess and seals the fate of his crew in the process. And now, back to the story. Knossos, captain of the Karave, played his violin with all the strength that he had. The Nereids danced around him, barely heeding his presence. The wonder in his eyes was gone, replaced with a burning desire. He didn't even blink as he watched the Nereid princess dance around the circle, for fear that she would disappear the split second he shut his eyes. He reached out, grabbing her by the hair. The silent laughs of the Nereids were replaced with horrible screams. The moment Knossos' hands gripped the Nereid princess's hair, her translucent skin hardened into human skin, and the scales fell from her body. All at once, the Nereids surrounding them leaped off the boat and into the enveloping ocean. Knossos twisted the maiden's hair in his hands to get a better grip as the boat rocked beneath them. The wind rose up around them, buffeting the sides of the ship with waves. Knossos squeezed his eyes shut and prayed the Karave would not capsize. When he opened his eyes, everything was still. The boat had not overturned, and he still held the princess by the hair. Now that she had become opaque, he thought she looked more beautiful than ever. He hoped she would forgive his unnecessary roughness. Knossos' heart sank. Before he had a chance to introduce himself to his new bride, his crew had emerged from below. He looked over his shoulder to see Leander towering over him, mouth open in disbelief. It was not long before the entire 30-man crew was on deck, jostling each other to get a look at the maiden the captain was holding. Leander took a step forward.
"Where did this woman come from?"
Knossos looked down at her. She was shaking in fear, hands covering her face from the men's gazes.
"She came from the sea."
Knossos drew himself up to his full height.
"And I caught her."
Knossos's gaze searched the crew. In Leander's eyes, he could see a flicker of desire, which spread from him to the rest of the crew. They were barely looking at their captain anymore, fixated on the gorgeous woman who was on their ship.
"We should draw lots for her."
Leander was practically shaking with lust, and he took another step forward. The crew around him nodded their heads and murmured their agreement. The maiden screamed, and the crew took a step back in alarm, but they did not fall back far, all clearly still entranced.
"Go below decks, all of you,"
Knossos ordered. They did not move, continuing to stare at this enchanting woman. The resentment that had been simmering in Knossos's chest since he was made their captain finally boiled over, and he yelled at them.
"How dare you show such insubordination! I ordered you to return to your bunks!"
Leander stepped in front of the crew again, flanked by three burly men.
"Give us the maiden," Leander commanded, "and we will decide who gets to have her."
"She is mine,"
Knossos responded unflinchingly,
"and I am your captain."
With a roar, the four men rushed Knossos. He attempted to pull away from them, but Leander ripped the woman out of his hands almost effortlessly. Knossos looked down, stunned, to see all that remained in his hands was a single strand of her golden hair, and then the other three men were upon him. As Leander dragged the woman away, the other sailors bound Knossos's hands behind him. Even as they pulled him toward the edge of the ship, Knossos couldn't take his eyes off the maiden, vanishing into the throng of men at the other end of the ship. He cried out,
"Let me go!"
The Nereid princess screamed, her voice piercing his heart. Then the three huge sailors heaved him into the ocean. Knossos was sure he would drown. Unable to move his hands, he kicked furiously, propelling himself toward the surface. He wriggled his wrists against the knots that held them in place. The first thing Knossos heard when he broke the surface was a horrible commotion from above. Cries of fury, wood splintering, and screams from the deck of his ship. Were the mutineers fighting amongst themselves? He hoped that the maiden would not be hurt in the struggle. A moment later, his hands were free. Then, something caught his eye. It was the lock of hair floating away from him on the current. He paddled toward it, desperate to have at least one memento from his encounter with the Nereid princess. But before he could reach it, it vanished beneath the waves. His gaze turned back toward the ship just in time to see the maiden standing on the side of his boat, golden hair flying in the sea breeze. How had she escaped the throng of violent sailors? Even as he thought this, Knossos's heart soared to see that she was unharmed. He tried to call out to her, but when he opened his mouth, it filled with salt water and he spluttered pathetically. In one majestic motion, the maiden leaped from the boat and silently disappeared into the water. As she touched the water, her scales reappeared and her skin resumed its translucent quality. She then turned and vanished into the waves. Knossos paddled furiously to the spot where she vanished and called out to her over and over again, but she was gone. He turned back to the Karave. The ship was still bursting with the sounds of violence and drifting farther away with every passing moment. Knossos never prided himself on being a strong swimmer, but the strength of his fury toward his crew spurned him onward, until he was grasping their anchor chain and pulling himself up the side of the boat. By the time he was halfway up the side of the ship, the Karave fell completely silent. Knossos pulled himself over the edge and froze in horror. The ship was strewn with dead bodies, the deck slick with blood. Leander lay by the mainmast, head turned at an impossible angle. His eyes stared out towards Knossos, frozen in an expression of gruesome passion. Many were worse off, clawed and broken in such horrific ways that Knossos had to force himself to ignore them. A groan drew Knossos to the bow. There he found a man named Petros, nursing a broken arm. Knossos approached warily.
"What happened, man? What became of the crew?"
Petros looked up, eyes watery with tears.
You are not our captain. Our captain drowned.
Nassos told him to not be afraid. He was no ghost. He had merely shaken his bonds and climbed back aboard. When he said this, the man's gaze hardened.
Then you hid the woman from us. You made us fight each other for her.
Nassos, with growing impatience, tried to explain that he had not hidden the woman from them, that she was a Nereid and had returned to the sea. This seemed to comfort the man very little.
Woe upon us,
he moaned.
If you had told us she was a Nereid, we would never have touched her. The blood of our comrades is on your head.
Insisting that Petros should take some rest, Nassos bandaged his wounds and searched the ship for any other survivors. At the stern, he found another sailor, Myrtikos, whose left eye had been gouged out in the melee. He reacted just as poorly to Nassos' return, and Nassos, incensed, told him that he did tell them the woman was a Nereid and they were too stubborn to listen. Myrtikos did not protest, but Nassos detected a resentful stare from the man's remaining eye. The night was long after that. Wordlessly, the three men cleaned up what remained of the other 28 crewmen, tossing the bodies and chunks of flesh overboard. They swabbed the deck clean of blood until the ship was unrecognizable from the wine-red carnage it had been mere hours before. None of them slept, even after their work was done. They sat on the deck, eyes despondently fixed on the wood beneath them. Nassos held his somehow undamaged violin between his hands, but did not risk playing a single note. The strings were splattered with flecks of red that he could not wash off. As the sun rose the next day over the horizon, Nassos stood and walked with confidence over to his two-man crew. He needed to show leadership to bolster their flagging spirits.
Come, men. We must continue our voyage to Sicily.
They did not move. Their eyes were wild, and they jumped at every sound. A crew of thoroughly broken men, Nassos thought to himself, a shiver passing up his spine. He spent hours attempting to command, coax, or bribe his men from their positions huddled on the deck. Finally, he promised them an equal share of the profits from their trip to Sicily. At this, they rose sullenly to their feet and set about their work. They didn't seem particularly heartened by the promise of a vastly increased salary. Nassos wondered whether they simply wanted him to be quiet. Even run with a crew of three men, the Karave was a fast craft, and it cut through the water with its usual speed. Nassos tried to hearten the men by doubling their rations of food and drink, but they did not dare go below decks. When Nassos asked why they would not leave the deck, the two men turned away from him and set about their work. If I thought they were disloyal before, Nassos thought, now they believe I am their enemy. Sometimes he caught them staring at him from their places on the deck, muttering among themselves. They always looked back whenever he approached, as if fearing some violent retribution. After days being rocked back and forth by the nearly empty vessel, Nassos finally drifted off into sleep. His sleep was fitful, his dreams full of seawater and screaming. When he closed his eyes, he found himself standing on the deck of the Karave, now lost in an impenetrable fog. His crew lined the deck, facing outward toward the sea. As he approached them, he saw that every one of them was dead, torn, bloody, and staring unblinkingly out toward the motionless water. He cried out to them to get the ship underway, but no one responded. His voice echoed across the water until all was silent. Then a crew member turned toward him. It was Leander, neck still broken. Nassos watched in horror as the man's head slumped down onto his chest. From that position, he croaked,
"Where do we sail now, Captain?"
Nassos jerked awake at the sound of a blade being drawn. As he blinked the sleep from his eyes, he saw his two remaining men standing above him. Petros had a knife raised above his head, ready to strike. When we return, we'll discover the fate of the Karave and the few left aboard. Now, back to the story. After a disastrous voyage in which his entire crew was slaughtered by a sea nereid, Nassos stared in shock at Petros and Myrtikos, his two remaining crewmen. The point of Petros's knife trembled as if the captain had awoken the very second it was about to plunge into his heart. His eyes went from Petros to Myrtikos and back again. Neither man looked outwardly malicious, but there was a grim finality to Petros's expression that he didn't like at all. Petros flinched, and suddenly all of Nassos's remaining strength surged through his limbs. He leaped at the armed man, grabbing at the knife. Petros fought back, but his starved frame was a shadow of his former strength. Myrtikos leapt backward as the two scrabbled at each other fiercely. Nassos snarled at Petros.
"What are you doing, man?"
Finally, Nassos wrenched the knife free and shoved Petros away from him. Petros landed on the deck. He cried out in pain, fresh red stains appearing on his bandaged arm. Myrtikos rushed to his side. Nassos stared down at his remaining crew, breathing heavily. Once again, he demanded an explanation for this poorly executed mutiny. Myrtikos looked up from his fallen partner, but his eyes didn't seem to focus on Nassos. Instead, he looked past him and into the distance.
"You are the cause of all our misery. Perhaps your death would appease the Nereids and our comrades' souls could rest."
Petros nodded.
"They torment us night and day. Their blood may be scrubbed from the deck, but their voices remain."
Nassos's fury eclipsed any pity he had left for the men, and he commanded them to get back to work.
"We'll all need each other to get to Sicily. After that, we need not see each other ever again."
Petros and Myrtikos looked at each other and back to their captain. Then, mechanically, they stood and went back to their posts. Nassos would never sleep again for the rest of the voyage. He kept Petros's knife close to his side, ready in case they tried to attack him again. A troubling storm cloud was at their tail for the last 2 days. None of them slept, and Nassos kept his distance from the other two whenever he could. Finally, out of boredom and despair, he took up his violin and attempted to play a few notes. The sound that issued from the instrument was like nothing Nassos had ever heard. He looked up and saw both the sailors staring at him with wild eyes. Nassos stopped immediately and dropped the instrument on the deck with a clang. When the sailors turned away, he felt tears rising to his eyes. When the coast of Sicily finally appeared on the horizon, Nassos almost whooped with glee. They could beat the storm and be there by nightfall. His joy was cut short when he saw Petros kneeling on the bow. What was he doing? When Nassos drew closer, he overheard Petros praying for a storm to wreck the ship before it reached the shore. Outraged, he grabbed the man by the shoulders and pulled him off his knees. Though Petros had once towered over him, days of starving had dwindled him considerably. Now he and Nassos were the same height. Petros met Nassos's gaze unflinchingly. His face was expressionless. Petros said,
"This ship is haunted. The evil power of the Nereids has possession of it. Nothing but misfortune can follow it.
Misfortune must take all of us.
He cast his eyes up to the heavens as he continued this chilling prophecy.
6 days I have been waiting for my share. 6 days, a long time, a long time.
Knossos turned his back on the man and began to walk back toward his captain's post. He was fed up with his lunatic crew and all the more ready to be rid of them. Knossos turned on his heel at the sound of something heavy hitting the water. He and Myrtikos ran to the side of the ship. Petros lay on his back in the water, staring up at the sky. A smile spread across his face, and his eyes shut as if he was going to sleep. After days of seeing the haunted look in this man's eyes, his peaceful expression was unnerving. As they watched, he bobbed in the waves and turned over. Petros sank like a stone, the air escaping his lungs and bubbling out onto the surface. When his body vanished, the bubbles kept rising, and then they were gone. Knossos leaned back from the water and turned his gaze on Myrtikos. His one remaining crew member looked almost longingly toward the depths.
If you plan on drowning yourself as well, you best do it now.
He gripped the knife by his side.
Or I can guarantee you a quicker passing.
Myrtikos shook his head, eyes cast downward, and returned to his post. Knossos grumbled as he made ready to land. The brief glimmer of hope he felt at the sight of the Sicilian coast had been utterly dashed by his comrade's suicide. It took every ounce of strength Knossos had left to guide his ship to a proper landing. As the nominal leader of a two-person crew, he no longer felt like a captain, just a sailor desperate to get to shore. Knossos breathed a sigh of relief when they secured the ship to the dock. Once the cargo was unloaded and paid for, they'd be able to put the horrible experience behind them. Knossos looked up as he was making his way to the cargo hold. He caught a glimpse of Myrtikos running down the dock away from the ship. As he watched, the only survivor of his crew vanished inland among merchants and other sailors, never to be seen again. Myrtikos had not even bothered to collect his share of the reward. Shaking his head, Knossos set about unloading his ship, one piece of cargo at a time. It took all day for Knossos to unload the cargo, and by the end, his muscles felt like they were going to burst from his skin. He caught some curious stares from the Sicilian dock workers, but none of them paused their work to ask what had become of his crew. Once he made the delivery, he sold the ship as well. He stayed in Sicily for a while with only his violin and his money. He drifted aimlessly from tavern to tavern, but he never played the violin. He ate his dinners alone and sat up late into the night, staring out at the sea. Sometimes he'd spy people looking at him and muttering to each other. They'd say things like,
"There's that old sea dog who came in on a haunted ship."
He wondered if they could even tell how young he was. He saw his reflection once in a mirror and nearly fainted. His face was lined and tanned from the sun. He had become a shadow of the young man who left Syrah to become an unwilling mariner. When curious people asked him, he would simply pay them to go away. It was easy enough, but then he realized he was only bolstering his own legend.
The old sea captain with the silent violin and bottomless pockets.
Staring at his piles of drachmas late at night, he came to the conclusion that he did not deserve this blood money. He wrapped it all up in a tight canvas bag, which he sent to his mother in Syrah. He kept a few drachmas to himself and bought a fishing boat. He then moved to the Corinthian coast, where he aimed to spend the remainder of his days fishing in isolation. Now a penniless fisherman, he stood on his boat, violin in his hands. he tried once more to play the song that had drawn the Nereids out of the water. The music still sounded wrong, and after a few minutes, he stopped. He wasn't even sure what his goal was. It was a wild impulse, an attempt to recapture the one moment in his life when he had felt in control. With a sigh, he cast the instrument into the sea and the bow after it. Many years passed uneventfully. Nassos never stopped seeing his dead crew when he shut his eyes. He grew resigned to the ghosts of his past. Sometimes while fishing, he thought he caught a glimpse of the Karave sailing on the horizon, only to realize he had misidentified a different boat. He hoped its new owner had better fortune with it. If Petros and Myrtikos had been right and the ship was haunted, then it was possible that all who sailed with her after that would meet a similar fate. One evening on his fishing boat, Nassos caught himself humming. What tune was that? He could not rightly remember. His memory was not what it used to be. Nassos stopped what he was doing. The sun had almost touched the horizon. He should have gone home by now. But somehow, he was unable to force himself back to shore. As the final orange rays of daylight vanished with a glint of green, darkness fell upon him. He hadn't been on the water at night since... His eyes went to the water. He knew he would not see the Nereids again, but he could feel their presence. In his old age, regret outgrew fear. He wanted the Nereid princess to know that there was no malice in his heart when he tried to take her from the sea, but she would never listen to his words, and rightfully so. He raised his hands over his head, as if in supplication, then toppled into the water. It was not very deep, but it was deep enough. The current around him picked up and began to guide him away from his boat. He closed his eyes and let out a long breath, expelling the air from his lungs. This would be his final resting place. The idea of beautiful women hiding beneath the waves, waiting to catch and curse sailors, is not unique to Giannakoulis's story. The most well-known version of these creatures hails from Greek mythology, the sirens. In the Odyssey and other such stories, these striking creatures sing secret desires to sailors, causing them to fall off their ships to their doom. The sirens are the literary precursor to mermaids, a less hostile version of the same creature common to modern fairy tales. But the haunted ship takes a different approach that almost subverts this archetype. In this story, it's the sailor who is the tempter, drawing the magical women out of the water with his music before attempting to catch and control them. Giannakoulis presents them as mostly harmless, only cursing sailors with madness if they attempt to control or hurt their kin. However, both story types share the same common message. Any man who attempts to control the sea will fail. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales, as well as all of Parcast's other shows, on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Several of you have asked how to help us. Well, if you enjoy the show, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Freddie Beckley. Tales is written by Robert Teamstra. I'm Vanessa Richardson.